You're listening to Health First, heard across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We've been talking to Marilyn Preston, author of All Is Well, The Art and Science of Well-Being, and she's been simplifying a healthy and happy lifestyle. You were just talking about sensing your body and sensing how your body's aligned and taking your awareness back into your body. Is there any more you wanted to add to that as far as wellness?
Yes, well, I want to add to some very specific ways to do that, because somatics training, which I think is so, you know, again, it's one of the big discoveries of my years on the fitness beat. Somatics training is still a very new phrase to people. So where do you look for it? Well, you can look for this kind of training if Feldenkrais practitioners, Alexander technique, yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi, Qigong. These are proven to help people, all people of every age and level of fitness. You can be, you can start at a place of total sedentary lifestyle and begin through these practices to develop this sense of body awareness. And, you know, it was somatics training. Sometimes when we're in yoga, Kathy, and we're lying on our backs and we're trying to balance our sacrum, you know, sense, is it tighter on the right or the left? Am I, how are my hips feeling? It looks like we're doing nothing at all. And yet, we're doing profound things in the body. So it's something I'm glad we could continue to mention it, because somatics training is something I highly recommend.
And how do we get motivated? There's all sorts of motivational speakers and challengers. How in simple lives, how do we really start to make things change and happen?
Yeah, so I've been studying this for years, and it is the key question, and here's why. Because people don't change because other people tell them to. So your doctor may say, you've got to lose weight, or you've got to start exercising. Your spouse, your children may want you to quit smoking or actually go to the gym more, but that isn't how people change. They might in the short term do it to please others, but ultimately you change because you value the change. You value the change for yourself, and you're ready to change. So change readiness is huge. Another thing about change is that it's not linear. You may be committed to making change, and you start out, and it's two steps forward and one step back. You'll fall off the train. You'll start, let's say you started to eat healthy breakfasts instead of a bagel these days is equivalent to 5 slices of bread. I read that recently.
Wow.
That's shocking. So let's say that's a habit you want to change, and you start to do that, and you have the 3 days of good breakfast, and then you slip back to a jelly donut. Okay, you can expect that. You can expect that you're gonna fall off the track, and the next day you're gonna get right back on again. You expect, and that's what resiliency is. And a big part of making change, and this is a hard one for a lot of people, is that you don't beat yourself up for these slip ups. You expect them. You laugh with yourself and at yourself, and then you start again. If it's something that you value, you just start again. And because this negative thinking, this is one of the chief things that gets in the way of making change. People begin to blame themselves, blame others, think of themselves as weak, I have no control, I'm just a jerk. And that leads to a downward spiral. It is a cliche, but you begin to think positively about, well, what did you, you know, what good things did you do? Well, I had breakfast 2 times this week, and there was a great breakfast, and then I didn't. You begin to develop a narrative that focuses on little successes that you have, not your failures, but your successes. And one other part of making change, again, this may surprise some people, is that you want to set goals that are really easy to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So if you're a runner and you say, okay, I'm going to train for a marathon in 6 months, you know what? Too big of a goal. better to tell yourself, set a small goal. I'll walk 2 blocks. If that's easy, great. Do it. Let it be easy. Relish your success and begin to increase gradually. But that is, I know a friend of mine, I read it in a book lately, but I know other people who've done the same. She wanted to develop a meditation practice, very, very important to health, physical, mental, and overall well-being. But, you know, she just couldn't do it. Just, you know, tried to sit on the cushion for 15 minutes, just couldn't do it. So she set herself a goal, a daily goal, of getting on her cushion for 30 seconds. That's it.
30 seconds.
She knew, you know, that's so simple, it's almost silly. But she did it. That's how she started. And what that does is, we know now from neuroscience, is that you begin to develop a neural pathway. So that it's not so, you know, your body resists change. But if it can, you can put your body on the cushion for 30 seconds, and then you get up and you come back tomorrow, pretty soon you'll stay for a minute or two. And the minute or two might turn into 5 minutes. And at some point, the 5 minutes could go longer or not. It's okay if it doesn't. It may not this month, but may next month. And these little successes, these little moments of victory, are what can motivate big changes that last a lifetime.
Making a new choice, just the tiniest little new choice, can change everything.
The tiniest choice that you can succeed at. And because, again, people start so often, they just feel like failures, and it doesn't work. And it's also, by the way, for any listeners who are playing sports, and if they begin to beat themselves up on the golf course or the tennis court, or and just say, you know, you can all that negative self-talk, it gets in the way of their performance. It doesn't help them. It hinders them from performing their best in any sport.
For sure. So, Marilyn, after all these years, what's the best, the worst, or the wackiest advice you've heard in over 40 years of covering fitness in journaling?
Okay, so here's what it is. It's so practical and so specific. Work at a standing desk. Don't sit. People sit for 7, 8, 9 hours a day. They sit at their computer, they sit at their car, they sit for meals. And, Kathy, there are more than 10,000 studies out there. I don't even know why they had to do more than 2,000, but there are more than 10,000 that show the dangers, the health dangers of too much sitting. The cliche is, you know, sitting is the new smoking.
Right.
Well, and the advantage of standing up, and what this over time to your body, you know, when you first begin to work at a stand-up desk, and by the way, they've come down in cost. There's so much, there are so many good designs out there now. Standing desks used to be like hydraulic big desks that would cost, I don't know, $1,200 or more. Now we're looking at models that are a third that price. They sit on top of your desk. They don't require batteries, electric lift. They just enable you to go from sitting to standing pretty easily. And the big thing about that is that when you do begin this practice, and this is my big recommendation that people start this, when you begin to sense fatigue, when your hips talk to you, when your knees begin to talk to you, sit down. Don't ignore it. Don't resist it. Your body, you know, you must listen to your body. Sit and then stand up again when you're ready. And you don't stand rigidly. You can move your feet, you can move your hair, you can do circles. You just want to keep the energy flowing, the juices flowing. So I can tell you, I mean, anecdotally, it cures low back pain, it creates energy. There's just tremendous amount of research now about the benefits.
And you don't have to stand all day at a standing desk. You go up and down as needed.
Absolutely. You go up and down. And what will happen, again, small changes.
Hinging at the
hips.
When
you first begin to do it, it might be a 5-minute stand, a 20-minute stand. Then you sit down, and then you rise up again when you're ready. And over time, you'll build up to hours of standing and much less sitting, and that's the part that helps your health. Less sitting.
So that's the best advice you've come away with after 40 years.
Well, I think it's very practical. I could go on, but I find that because so many people don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, they just sit and sit and sit, and they don't realize the damage that is done to their body over time. So years later, you know, the pounds develop and digestive problems develop and all kinds of tightness and stagnation leading to back pain and foot pain and knee pain. And, you know, it's a cycle. So I think standing is getting used to standing and motion, of course, movement. But people have heard this forever, you know, get more exercise.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to focus on something new and something that is enormously helpful.
Yeah, you've demystified it very well. Lots of really good, simple choices to just change the pathways in our brains so we start to pick healthier ways. So Marilyn Preston's book is All Is Well. And where can we find this book? Do you have a website as well?
Yes, I do have a website, marilynpreston.com. The book was published by Creators Publishing. It came out in late April, and in August it became an Amazon bestseller, and I think that's a good place to find it. I love bookstores, but the easiest way to find All Is Well, The Art and Science of Personal Well-Being, is to go to Amazon and either download it as an ebook or buy the real book. It's an easy read, and it's smart, and it's funny, and thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks so much for being on the show, Marilyn. It was great to have you. So we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Roland Griffith, author of Finding Peace, One Pop at a Time.